our firefighting world. Today we have a fascinating podcast with the Assistant Fire Chief of the San Bernardino County Fire Protection District, Dan Muncy. Dan is also the California Fire Chiefs Association Operations Section President and part of the IAFC Technology Council. Dan will give us some context on what the American firefighter looked like in the early 1900s and what it looks like today. And there are some differences, but unfortunately a lot of similarities that we see in terms of how we actually approach responding to fires, and a lot of this relating to situational knowledge and how we can utilize data to enable an efficient response. We'll look at issues with data overload, utilizing artificial intelligence, and how we ultimately visualize this data to allow firefighters to make the best decision in real time. We're going to dive into certain things around community risk reduction and how we can continue to embrace leadership in the fire service to harness and be a change management leader for innovation in the fire service. Dan is a wealth of knowledge. I really think you guys are going to enjoy this podcast. We look forward to your feedback. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Doing great, Kevin. Thank you for having me on.
It's an honor. So give us a little background for those of us that don't know Dan Muncy.
Sure. I'm Assistant Chief of the County of San Bernardino Fire Protection District. I'm the California Fire Chiefs Association Operations Section President this year. And I'm on the IFC as a technology council member. And over the last couple of years, I've gotten really involved in technology and how it applies to my fire department and the California Fire Service as well as the nation.
That's awesome. So many different roles and a couple different hats within the fire service itself, and particularly within the IAFC Tech Council, seeing firsthand of what is some of the technology out there and looking at some of the evolution from when you first started to where you are now. So can you give us a little context on from your perspective on looking at technology here and giving some context around the evolution of the fire service as it relates to technology? How would you maybe give us a status of where we are at with the fire service embracing tech, and what are some of these issues that we face?
Funny you should ask that. Often when I do presentations around the country, I always start with a short clip of a movie that was filmed well over 100 years ago. It's called The American Fireman. The American Fireman, it was in 1903, and it was filmed by a guy named Edwin Porter. So the interesting thing about this film, and to the listeners, if you haven't seen it, just Google it. There's a couple of different versions that are out there. The interesting thing about this film is it was one of the first films that actually told a story. Previously, a movie would be filmed, and it would just be a daily scene. There was no actors, there was no narrative, there was no purpose. It was just more documentation. But if you watch The American Fireman, you see the fire service as it was in 1903. You see a citizen walking up to a call box and establishing an alarm. You see an alarm ringing in the firehouse, and you see the firefighters going into action. So the reason I start with this movie, and it's not a long movie, it's just 6 or 7 minutes, and I usually cut it down quite a bit. But if you watch the movie, you realize that the things that we do in the fire service are almost exactly the same thing that was caught on film in 1903. We receive an alarm. The alarm goes to the firehouse, and we all jump on our fire engines and respond to the emergency. And in the film, you literally see the horses pulling the steamers and the ladder wagons. You see the chief monkey. We're still responding just like that, except with horsepower. We don't really have a good situational knowledge of the incidents that we're responding to. In the film, you see them going to the structure that's on fire and kicking down the doors and going in and rescuing one of the occupants. They respond with a full ERF to this building. And today, there's a lot of parallels in what we do. We respond with a full ERF. We're not using the actual information of the event, information gathered pre-event, to modify our responses. So I think that's a good starting point at where we're at in the California Fire Service. Technology is starting to evolve. We're having a better common operating platform, whether you're using Tablet Command or Intera or some of the other common operating platforms are out there. But we're not leveraging that technology to really make an efficient response. An efficient response is important for a couple of reasons. One is for the safety of our personnel. Two, the safety of the public we serve. Three, to make sure we're having a coordinated response and efficiently mitigating incidents. And four, by having efficient response, you start establishing fiscal conservation. I think all of us are under pressure to do that right now.
Yeah, makes sense. And so, I like how you mentioned where even though early 1900s, there's the way we were doing stuff and looking at how it is today, it may look different, but actually some of the practices are very similar. And I saw that video from, it's just a bunch of people responding to a fire and facing it head on and jumping in. I know today we do have improved PPE and improved SCBA, but it is kind of almost scary to think that even though we have some of this tech, some of our procedures are the same. And one word that I think really hit home to me is that situational knowledge, where there's that whole moment from when the alarm goes off to when you're actually at the fire and fighting it. And we're kind of now in this dilemma where we have the need to respond better and have this situational knowledge that's improved. But what data is out there that's available today that can allow us to do that better? And how do we visualize that data and make that data accessible and digestible for firefighters in the field today?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. Is that data, and data's out there, and we need to improve quality of data, and that's possibly a different conversation. We'll probably touch on that. But we have the data. It's data is just raw information. It's not processed information, and you could be overloaded by data. You can use the data incorrectly, unknowingly, to make operational decisions. We want to make sure that the data actually provides the information that we need so we can gather the knowledge that we need to establish our operational readiness and procedures. So the fundamental base of ensuring that we have good data collection is something that the fire service struggles to do. And lately, it's when I think about data, I realize that the problem with data collection is that human element. We have to, and I'm encouraging companies out there as I meet with them and discuss it with them, that we have to remove the human from data collection. We have to use more AI to determine the data points that we need in the fire service. For instance, we know right now with AVL when a fire engine's wheels are rolling. We know when we arrive on scene. Those are two data points that are collected without the human intervention, where 10 years ago, it required somebody getting on the radio, it required somebody in dispatch entering that information. I think more and more with the Internet of Things, you're going to see with the connectivity that we have with our appliances, say on an EMS call, our heart monitors, for instance, are gathering data. I think you're going to see better quality data that's going to help enable us to make better decisions. And then on the flip side of that, we're going to have better data into the situations that we're responding to. The IoT, again, has given us the ability to connect almost everything in a building. And over the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see buildings talk to the first responders in a way that we couldn't even imagine 10 years ago. For instance, a smoke detector can activate. A smoke detector can send information to the responders to say, this smoke detector in this section of the building in this room has activated. That's an important data set. When you look at a building as a whole, though, we start talking about smart buildings, we realize that buildings need to be designed with public safety in mind to help us mitigate incidents before they occur. If you have a smoke detector that activates and tells you there's smoke, well, that's a good data point, but what does that actually mean? That's an example of having data without having any real information. Why and how is it activated? How much smoke's in a room? Is it traveling down the hallway? And then what about the other elements? Is there people in that room? Are the people moving in that room? So now you're tying in motion sensors, you're tying in cameras, and you need to be delivered to the firefighters on a platform that's usable, that they can look and they can see the building on their common operating platform. They can look into the building and they can see which smoke detectors are activated. Has the fire protection system activated? They can use heat sensors. Is the fire growing? If so, where is the fire growing? Is it growing vertically? Is it growing horizontally? Using motion detectors, where are the victims? Are they exiting the building? Do you see victims congregated in a room where they're not moving? And with those operations decisions, now you can make good quality with that information. Now you can make good quality decisions on how to affect your operations to best keep your firefighters safe, the public safe, and mitigate your emergencies. So the problem with all that, though, is the technology, while it's rapidly evolving, the delivery of the technology to the fire service is delayed. So one of the things I think about, I've been thinking about a lot, is a BIM file, which is building information modeling. And simply put, it's where I think we're all familiar with CAD or AutoCAD. That's a 2D drawing of a building. You talk BIM files, that's a 3D modeling of a building. And you're starting to see some cities require BIM modeling when architects turn in plans to their jurisdictions. So cities can start having smart development of their buildings. In the city's viewpoint, for an example, they may want to know that if you construct a six-story building, whose view is it going to block of the downtown area, or maybe an ocean view? So it's important to the cities, but it's incredibly important to the firefighters as we're responding in, because now we have a great 3D model that can be used on our operating platforms that in conjunction with the IoT and the smart devices that are out there to give us a better conceptual view of that building. That's going to be incredibly important moving forward.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think kind of on that one point you hit on, that kind of, I want to say surprises me, but I think would maybe be something we want to elaborate on, is that whole notion of having data with no information. And when looking at how do we incorporate, I believe we still need the human element, but how do we look at using artificial intelligence to be able to, A, sift through all this data to be able to find various abnormalities, but then, two, how do we present it in a way that you're a firefighter that's going from the fire department to the scene? We're not asking the firefighter to pull up some 3-ring binder that's 3 inches thick, but how do you now utilize this tech and to not only sift through the data, but to actually be presented in a way? I mean, is that through like a tablet, or do you see some method of some level of augmented reality overlay that can somewhat communicate this data to you, or kind of what do you see is the best way to actually visualize and communicate this data in real time?
So there are companies out there that are starting to do a really good job at that. And FirstDo is one of those that takes available data and collects it and then provides it to firefighters in a meaningful platform. And generally those platforms are going to be some sort of a mobile data terminal, a computer device, or a tablet. I think you're going to see more and more of that data collection and basically building that the building's information profile to be delivered to the firefighters. So the cool thing with FirstDo is exactly what you mentioned, is that all of us that started in fire service over 10 years ago, and for me, my whole career, the 3-ring binder has been next to the company officer and the fire engine. And as you're responding to an incident, you're looking at 3D binder and you're pulling up the pre-plans of the building and you're developing a plan off that. Now, the problem is a pre-plan, even the best kept 3-ring binders, that's a snapshot of time at that particular moment. And every firefighter that's ever used a 3-ring binder for pre-plans will tell you that pre-plans are notoriously out of date for a variety of reasons. And it's only giving you very limited information. So companies like FirstDo that take that information that's available out there and collects it from the building department, collects it from the water department, from the fire prevention data, and starts combining all that information in and gives you a viewpoint of what the situation is right there at that particular moment of time is incredibly important. Now, one of the other hats I wear is a wildland firefighter, and we have rules of engagement in wildfire. And one of those rules that's just fundamental is situational awareness. And any fire I've ever hiked into, I've had a map. And when you go to a briefing, they have what they call a BAM. And if you don't know what BAM is, I'm not going to explain it, but it's a big map. Let's put it that way. It's remarkable to me at today's day and age that firefighters responding to a structure fire don't have that same situational awareness often. They don't have a map of what they're going into. FirstDo provides you with any hazmat storage that's in a building. Where is it located? It'll tell you where the stairwells are going through the roof. It'll tell you where your FDCs are and your hydrants are. We're responding in the buildings totally blind and not having that basic situational awareness. And then we started adding on the other things we've talked about a few minutes ago, but the Internet of Things and how there's going to be connectivity between your smoke detectors and your motion detectors and cameras. Now you're really able to have that situational awareness. So now that information can be provided to a tablet. In the future, will there be headsets? Probably. That's where the industry trend are going, is more into that virtual 3D reality. It's not beyond comprehension that we'll have a commander sitting back in his vehicle with a 3D headset that can watch everything that's going on in a building, know exactly where those firefighters are as they're moving through the building, be able to see what those firefighters are seeing, be able to read all the sensors and provide that information back to the firefighters. That's where the industry is going. But with that said, one of my favorite people on earth, David Blankenship, he's mentioned to me a couple times that there's two industries out there that are the slowest at adopting technology. The slowest is the construction industry. And those of us that have a background in construction industry, you realize that we really don't use technology much for constructing buildings. And the second industry is the fire service. And that's back to the Edwin Porter movie, The American Fireman. And that's why, if you look back today, over 115 years later, we still respond exactly like we did in that movie.
Yeah, and you had mentioned some other quote when I first talked to you about what are the two things that firefighters hate?
Yeah, Chief Brunicini, he always said the two things that firefighters hate is change and not changing.
Yeah, and so that to me looks to be one of the biggest hurdles that we face from the industry side, from the venture capitalist side, the institutional side, the end user side. That hurdle of getting over that phrase of how the fire service is tradition unimpeded by progress, how do we overcome that old school tradition, yet the evolution of the changing demands that are requiring us to rethink the way that we approach firefighter wellness or firefighter data accessibility? It seems to be somewhat of a cultural thing. So what needs to happen? I mean, do we need, I hate to say like scare tactics, but what needs to happen to be able to kind of break down these cultural norms? Is it more education, or what do you recommend for that?
Yeah, I think we can take a really old-fashioned approach to that called leadership. And there has to be leadership in all levels in the fire service. And as a firefighter, I got into the industry with the thought that I would be responding to structure fires. I'd be kicking down the doors. I'd be crawling in under thick black smoke. I would find the heat of the fire, and I'd put a straight stream to the base of the fire. That's the job I got into. That's the job that I love, and I would do that job for the rest of my career if I could do that. But the industry's changing. Public expectations are changing. And as a fire service leader, we have to lead the fire services into a different direction to not only adopt technology, to adopt modern fire behavior, and understanding modern fire behavior and understanding of what are the tactics that need to employ to mitigate the situations that we're now faced with. Leadership for me in our current firefighter tower, and probably once or twice a year we have firefighter towers in our fire department, it starts there. When you have the new recruits in, you have to establish the idea that the firefighting that you've seen in the movies and the firefighting that you may be experiencing today isn't going to be how we're responding to emergencies in the future. And start putting that idea into their heads that you need to be constantly evolving, that there needs to be a continual change process, and we need to be looking for continual improvement in our industry. We need to talk about community risk reduction very early on in a firefighter's career. Because if you're established in the career, the last thing you want to know or talk about is community risk reduction. What you want to do is you want to respond with 4 people on your fire engine and 5 people on your trucks to incidents, to mitigate the incidents using the technology you always have and using the tactics that you always have. And it takes leadership to get over that hump. And I'm not saying that every person that's been a firefighter for 20 years feels like that, but I would say that that's how I feel. That's what I want to do. And that the vast majority of firefighters got into the business to be firefighters, not to be technological wizards, not to try to even prevent the incident from occurring. So we talked about technology. I gave an example of responding to the event. But how do we leverage technology to prevent the event from occurring? I mean, that's really what our jobs are. Recently, I was back in the National Fire Academy, and one of the instructors mentioned a quote from one of his previous students. I don't recall who said it, but they said that every call we respond to is a failure, and that we need to look at every 911 activation as a failure because we should be doing everything we can to prevent that. And that's an interesting viewpoint for technology. What can we use? How can we use technology to prevent us from having to use our firefighter skills? So I think you're going to see the industry shifting more and more towards community risk reduction. I think that you're going to see fire leadership having to step up and lead through these changes and talk to our younger firefighters as they're entering the fire service on what are the expectations of the future. On the other side, we need to form better coalitions. We need to form better collaboration and partnerships with our industry partners. And I'm very, very big on private-public partnerships. There's a lot of us in the fire service can visualize the tools that we need, but very few of us in the fire service that can actually produce those tools that we need. On the flip side, if you've been a fire chief for longer than a year, you've probably had numerous employees coming up to you and shoving a new piece of technology underneath your nose and saying, hey, chief, we need this. We have to have this. Technology's pushed at our firefighters at trade shows and on the internet and on Facebook. And as a fire chief, we're looking at that going, do I really need that technology? How's it going to make a difference? And how much is it? Wow, it's that much money. And if I spend that much money out of my budget, am I going to see a return? Is that product going to be supported next year? More importantly, is it going to have operability with the other systems that we're currently deploying in our in our fire department. So we have to understand that with the industry partners, that we have to have a seat at the table, and we need to say, these products are great, but this is what we need, and this is probably what we're going to need next year. We have to be part of that conversation and driving the technological conversation. Recently, I heard a great presentation, and the title of it was, is technology driving us, or are we driving technology? In other words, are we making our leadership decisions based on the available technology, or are we making decisions that are we looking at the future and saying, this is the technology that we need that's going to help us to achieve the mitigation emergencies pre-event or the operational readiness that we need, or have the operating picture to keep our firefighters and our citizens safe?
That's an interesting dynamic. Are we evolving to the tech, or is the tech evolving to us? And I think that's one way that I like to approach innovation, where I don't want to shove a widget down someone's throat just because it's a way to sell a product. But what is truly the need, and how do we reverse engineer that need with some technology that may be on the market? And that's really what's so important with having these conversations with you in the industry, because we can have technologists and entrepreneurs and engineers sitting in front of a whiteboard just talking to each other and drawing stuff, but that really doesn't do any good unless they talk to you. Unless they talk to the firefighters about what are your actual needs and how can we take this off-the-shelf tech and maybe tweak it a little bit to actually bring the most value to what you need. And that may be really with any technology.
That's all true. We have to also understand that technology is evolving so quick that the products that we saw last year, and one of the things we do at the California Fire Chiefs Association, the operations section, is we host a tech summit every single year. And it's amazing to see products evolve in a single year. And a lot of the things that we're excited about is a collaboration between some of the tech leaders out there. They're starting to develop their own standards of operability and then integrating in their systems various other platforms. They're making it very easy for the end user. I think a few minutes ago you mentioned that technology ease of use. And that's incredibly important. When you get to an emergency scene, the first 3 minutes, you're incredibly busy. You're going to be thinking about a million different things. And the last thing you want to do is have to think about the technology that you're deploying and how do I use this technology. So I always think that technology needs to be very intuitive. And the example that I give when I'm out speaking or teaching is that I hopped on an airplane and I didn't want to pay for the internet connection on the airplane. So I quickly downloaded a game and the airplane took off. And once the plane was in the air, I pulled the game up and I immediately started playing this game. There was no manual that I had to read. There was no videos that I had to watch. Just intuitively, I knew how to play this game on my phone. Fire service technology has to be that simple. It has to be that easy. And the integration and the operability between the systems has to be that easy. I can't have multiple screens pulled up in an iPad. I have to have the information provided to me in one interface. Yeah. It's just outstanding over the last year to see a lot of the leading operating platforms out there, the common operating platforms and the common operating pictures that we receive, starting to integrate together to provide that single viewpoint for the user and allow that intuitive nature to take over.
Yep. It's got to be keep it stupid simple, or simple stupid, whatever that phrase is.
Something like that.
Yeah. So two final questions I want to ask you before we close out here. And they're kind of generic questions, but I'll ask both of them, and then you can answer them however you, whichever one you like first. But what, moving forward in the fire service, you know, it's middle of 2019, what excites you most moving forward as it pertains to technology and innovation in the fire service? And what keeps you up at night as far as something that scares you or thinks that concerns you the most as it pertains to the future of the fire service?
It's a good question. We discussed a lot of things with BIMS, building information modeling. There has to be, I believe, a central collection point for that information for the fire service and the National Fire Service. You see it in the United Kingdom, all government built buildings require BIM files, and then they're starting to collect that information. We need to do the same thing in the United States. We have to provide the 3D modeling of the buildings to the firefighters responding in, and not only to the firefighters, but other public safety professionals. I guarantee that our law enforcement partners would love to have 3D modeling. They would love to know in certain situations when people are huddled in a room and not moving, or where people are moving to and from. So I think collection of the BIM files that are out there, and having a standard format for the collection, and then be able to deliver it to the end user. I think that's incredibly important. I think what keeps me up at night is that we adopt technology. We start becoming too reliant on technology, and we forget that we still have to do our jobs as firefighters. And are you able to respond to emergency if you lose connectivity? I'll say that, well, Thomas Brothers, a map that we all grew up, isn't produced anymore. So if we don't have, and if we lose our GPS ability, are we going to be able to still respond to calls? And I think in many cases, in many cities, the engineers, they're fire apparatus operators, they don't have the knowledge that the previous generations had. I remember growing up, and a fire apparatus operator would know every single address, every single street in his district, every single alleyway. I don't think that exists anymore. I think people are looking at computer screens way too much. Well, my agency, as we first started adopting technology and a common operating platform, I was very concerned that our incident commanders would be staring at a screen and making decisions based on what was on the screen, and not making decisions on what the building was telling us. You know, we're taught to look at the building and where's the smoke, and you know, what is the smoke doing, and where's the fire, where are firefighters? You're getting a lot of information from looking at that. And it's back to cell phones. We don't drive cars and talk on handheld cell phones anymore. And the reason is there's many studies that show that literally your peripheral vision narrows when you're on a cell phone. You're not able to focus on everything around you. You're only seeing 60% of what's in front of you instead of 100% if you weren't using that phone. My concern is that we get so involved in technology, we forget to do our jobs. I think that's something we need to fight against.
Well put. And Dan, if people want to get in touch with you or learn more about some of the work that you're doing, what would be the best way to get in touch? Would it be LinkedIn or kind of email, or what do you think would be best?
Sure. I am on LinkedIn, and that's a pretty good way to find me. It's, my profile is under Dan Muncy, the County of San Bernardino Fire Protection District. They can also email me at any time. My personal email is DanielRobertMuncy@outlook.com. That's Daniel Robert Muncy, spelled M-U-N-S-E-Y, at outlook.com. And I'm always happy to have conversations with either industry professionals or fellow firefighters. I've spoken to a lot of people in different countries lately, and a lot of people that are doing the same thing that we're doing in California and across the United States. Matter of fact, it's our technological summit that we started in California. May I speak a minute on that?
Yeah, of course.
Sure. So 2 years ago, when I was elected the president of the operations section, I explained to the group that I would be happy to do that role, but the one thing that I didn't want to do is just have a meeting to go to another meeting. I said, we need to do a needs assessment. We need to figure out what are the needs of the fire service, and then we need to actually start working on those needs. That meeting right there is the whole reason why I got involved in technology in the fire service, because we did our needs assessment. Near the very top was the unsurety of what technology should be adopted. What are technologies out there? What technology should be adopted? And if we adopt this technology, is it going to be supported in the future? Is it going to have operability with our neighbors? So from there, we started our tech summit, and we're very, very proud of it. We approached Esri with the realization that 90% of the fire service uses Esri products or has access to Esri products, and probably 85% of the fire service doesn't realize they have access to Esri products or the Esri products that are available out there. We approached Esri, and we set up a technological summit, kind of in line of a TED Talk, where we have our technological leaders show up, and they do presentations in, you know, 10 to 15 minute format and explain what the product is and how it's going to make a difference in the fire service. And then we ask them some tough questions. How is this going to be operable with the other technologies out there? Where is this going to be supported in the future? We started this two-way dialogue between the technological leaders out there and operations personnel, mostly chiefs, with augmented by their GIS staff, getting the operations and the GIS together to start looking at some of the available technologies. We're just really proud of that Esri partnership and where it's gone. And from there, we're seeing it launch into other states. Recently, I was at Texas A&M with TEKS, and they did a very similar summit with Esri. Now I'm also seeing it in the Dallas metro area. There's one of my friends is working hard to put on a tech summit there, because we have to get the information out to our chief officers. our millennials, our younger employees, they know the technology that's out there and they want it. And as fire chiefs, we need to be very responsible in providing that technology that they need to keep them safe and to have a better understanding of the situations that we're responding into. But at the same time, we have to protect our budgets and we have to make sure that we're going to maintain operability. So things like that is just really important. The fire service, we're really proud of that here in California.
Yeah. Well, thank you for elaborating on all those different opportunities and the programs you're doing. And I couldn't agree more about don't want to just have a meeting or another event just to have another meeting. But it's important to actually have action items and really take value and bring value to those involved. And I appreciate everything you're doing from the many hats you wear, from being fire chief and the operations section president within California Fire Chiefs Association, and being a voice of reason and in technology for the fire industry. We need more people like you, and it's an honor to have this conversation, and I look forward to having more conversations with you in the future about some of these different technology opportunities and innovation in the fire service.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you for what you do in this podcast. It's very educational even for me. I listen to it regularly and want to just encourage you to continue doing what you're doing.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, leave a comment, and follow us on social media at Smart Firefighting. We would love to know more about what you liked or did not like about this episode. Even more so, we want to know, what do you want to hear more about? Any feedback for future interviews or topics is highly welcomed and encouraged. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to next time.